of being here during Sukkot and what that means. When you look at even the holy days, you really see Yahweh's plan of salvation, where you start out in Aviv, the beginning of the year, and like I said, here I'm going to really try to stretch your concepts of things. You know, because again, as Westerners, we think one way, but in Israelite mind, they think another way. And I give an example where we go to different biblical parks, and if I were to say to someone, what's your favorite tree? You know, and a Western mind says, oh, I like a palm tree. Why do you like a palm tree? Well, it's really pretty, the leaves are like this. But that's a Western mindset, it's not very functional. If you were to say to an Israelite, what's your favorite tree? Their answer would be something like an olive tree. Well, why an olive tree? Because it gives me olives for food, it gives me oil for medicine, and it gives me hardwood for cooking. There's three functions to it. And what you'll see here, and you know this in Africa, you don't throw anything away. Everything is used. When I was in Africa, I saw that they used old tires to make shoes and sneakers, you know, for themselves. And that's the kind of functional mindset we need to get back. You know, as it talks about in the book of Joel, that before us is the Garden of Eden and behind us is a burnt wilderness. So we want to get back to Yahweh's mindset that everything has a purpose. You know, get away from this throwaway society. You know, in all forms. You know, we even know today that they're going so far as to rationalize medicine. And we're not going to give it to older people because they're not good enough, you know. Everything has a purpose in Yahweh's kingdom. So when you look at the holy days, you know, the holy days start at the beginning of the year. In Exodus 12, it's called Aviv. Aviv is the beginning of months. Aviv literally means young, green. It's starting, and it comes from Aviv barley, because the barley is in a stage that you can use it for the wave sheaf ceremony. And the very first, it's not actually a holy day, but the very first set-apart time is Pesach. You know, and we know Pesach is about the sacrifice of Yeshua, the shed blood of Yeshua. We know that in ancient Israel, if the blood was not on your door, you were in trouble. So it all starts and ends with Yeshua HaMashiach. That's the beginning and the end of it. And now, after you take the symbols of the bread and the wine, late 13th, beginning of 14th, now the day of Pesach, you're supposed to take the leaven out of your house. You're supposed to sweep through your house and take it out. Now, why would you take the leaven out after you take the symbols of the bread and the wine? Because you don't have the strength to do it on your own. First, you have to accept the blood of Messiah. You have to take those symbols of renewal. And then and only then can you take the leaven, the sin, out of your life. And then for 7 days, you symbolize that. By what? By not eating leaven. And all of a sudden, the fourth day of unleavened bread, you're looking in the back of your cabinet for the cinnamon, and your hand touches an old waffle. It's like, oh, I missed something. Anybody that's been, I've been keeping unleavened bread for almost 30 years. And not every year, but there's been a few years that I forgot something. And it's the same way with our life. There's sins in the back of our life that we don't know yet. So it's great. It's really a reminder, because every single day of unleavened bread, you have to think about it. Because we're so used to eating things. And it's not just bread. Actually, the word bread is never there. It's unleavened things. So literally, it's anything. It's baking soda. Anything that causes to rise, you have to look at. And some you don't even know. You know, that there could be leaven. There could be a raising agent in it. But it makes you every meal, every day, to be thinking about it. And then, of course, the day after the weekly Sabbath, during unleavened bread, is the Feast of First Fruits, representing the time we're living in, the first fruits of Yeshua, that will meet him right here. Like I said, right at that Mount of Olives. That's right where his feet are going to stand, and we'll get there one way or the other. I'll make sure before we leave we're on that Mount of Olives, because there's a lot of important things we have to talk about up there. But when his feet stand on the Mount of Olives, it will split in two, the Feast of First Fruits, and then he is the first of the first fruits, and then we will be with him at his coming. And that starts your 50-day count to Shavuot. And Shavuot literally means count 50. So during those seven sevens, you know, which again we're going to see connected with Sukkot here, because seven is the number of completion, and we'll see how that's connected with Sukkot. And then the day after the seventh Sabbath is Shavuot, the giving of the Holy Spirit. So you see, though, that you have to be patient. We see that you have to work on your life. We see that you have to focus on and really make this commitment if you want the outpouring of the Holy Spirit on Shavuot. And then we have this time in between Shavuot and these four holy days. And you know what? Over here, that time is hot. It's summertime, you know. But at the same rate, you know, in the middle of July, you see that little pomegranate coming out, and you can know exactly the time that it's going to be. And the whole calendar, the whole year, Yahweh says in Deuteronomy 11 that there's no land like Israel. It's not like the land of Egypt where you had a warding your guardian with your foot. But he says he watches Israel from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, equinox to equinox, circular pattern. You know, like I said, everything with Yahweh is in the circular. It's not in the linear. So then all of a sudden you get through those dog days of summer and you come to Yom Teruah. Yom Teruah, which is actually not really technically the Feast of Trumpets, although there is blowing of trumpets, but it's the Feast of Joy, it's the Feast of Shouting, it's the Feast of Clamor. And yet at the same rate, it's the Feast of Terror. And I gave a message on this on Yom Teruah. Why? How could it be happiness and sadness at the same time? Because if you're a first fruit, and you've been faithful, and you've endured to the end, when Yeshua comes on the Mount of Olives, you're going to be happy, and you will be blowing that trumpet. But if you're not, if you're going toward the ways of the world, if you're getting involved in this global one world government, if you're taking the mark of the beast, you will not be happy to see Yeshua. We know that Yeshua's two witnesses, when they come for 3.5 years, that when they die right here in Jerusalem, what's going to happen? The whole world is going to have a party because of these two prophets that tormented the earth because of sin. So Yom Teruah is a day of joy if you're a first fruit. It's a day of sorrow if you're not. And then you have the 10 days of war. The Jewish people believe that on Yom Teruah every year, everything you did throughout the year is written down in the Book of Life. And then on Yom Kippur, it's sealed. And the 10 days of war are the 10 days for you to repent and change that. To try to change Yahweh's mind. The same way that Moses did when he went up with the golden calf incident. And that if you have a problem with anybody, you're supposed to rectify it during those days. And it's interesting, you know, Yeshua returns on that day, and then you have the 10 days of awe there, and then you have Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, a day that we fast. It's a day that we afflict our soul, because it's Yom Kippur, the day of at-one-ment. And it's showing being at one with Yahweh. And you will never be at one with Yahweh if you're walking in the flesh. And that's New Testament, Galatians 5. Walk in the flesh, and you will reap the flesh. Walk in the Spirit, and you'll reap the Spirit. So we deny our flesh on that day. We don't eat. We don't drink. You know, we totally deny the flesh, and we focus on being at one with Yahweh. And yet, it represents the wedding supper. Because he says, I will turn your fast days to feast days. And then we're here. Then you have Sukkot. You know, the Messiah is here. He did everything. He did everything he said. He got rid of all the enemies. And now Sukkot is the seventh feast in the seventh month. It lasts for 7 days, showing completeness. Because numbers are very important in the Bible. You know, you have the number 3 as a unity number and a resurrection number. You have the number 4 is a world number, north, south, east, and west. Number 5 is the number of grace. And you'll notice in the Bible, you'll see the pattern with these numbers. 6 being the number of man. And that's why the anti-Messiah keeps the number 666. Why is it? Because it's the number of man unified. It's the one world government. It's man unified. Not unified to Yahweh, unified to himself. And that's what the global one world government tells you. That you can become your own Elohim. You know, you don't need a master in heaven. And that's why it's 666. Number 7 is the number of completion. So it's showing the seventh feast, the seventh month, lasts for 7 days. 8 is the number of new beginnings. The resurrection. Happening on the 8th day. So we see these numbers are important. 9 is the number of judgment. 11 is the number of incomplete government. 12 is the number of complete government. And of course, 40 is the number of trial or overcoming. It depends how you look at it. But we see, you know, fasting 40 days. You know, we see that Yeshua fasted 40 days. Moses fasted 40 days. So we see the number of 40 related with that. But it really shows that every year, if you're keeping these holy days, this clock in the sky that's going around year after year, you'll never lose sight of Yahweh's plan of salvation. Because you wonder. You know, I say, all these scholars that are so smart, you know, that know 1,000 times more than I, and they can't count to 10. They can't count to 10. There's 150 times I can show you in your Bible that there's 10 commandments. There's not once that ever says any of those commandments are done away with. Psalm 110, they're there forever and ever. They say to Yeshua, what do I do, Master, to get eternal life? Keep the commandments. Which ones? Honor your father and mother. You know, all the commandments of the Ten Commandments. I've heard people say the only commandment that's not reiterated in the New Testament is the Sabbath. The Sabbath is reiterated more in the New Testament than any other commandment. Hebrews 4 and verse 9. Therefore, it is the duty of the people of Yahweh to keep the Sabbath day. So they're all there. They're all there. And yet, by somehow the congregation getting split under Constantine, probably talk more about Constantine along the way in the next 2 weeks. What happens, Constantine has a vision, and in this vision he sees a big cross, and the next day he's going to battle, and he wins the battle, and he says, I have become a Christian. And that's the day I think that believers stopped using that word. It's in the Bible 3 times, but it started meaning something very different than it meant when in Antioch, where non-Jewish people were calling other people Christians at that time. Because Constantine's Christianity was, I will take everything that was in the Bible and we're going to renovate it toward the sun god. That was Constantine's version of it. So what happens? The true believers go underground, and then the universal or Catholic Church becomes strong, and they keep building up and they keep going out. And that's what you have today. Because every other church that has come off of there, what does Protestant mean? Protesting. They protested the universal or Catholic Church. But the universal Catholic Church was never Yahweh's church. The universal church was Constantine's church. There has always been, and I have a whole course that I do at the Bible school on this, historically showing there has always been a remnant of true covenant, commandment-keeping people from the time of Yeshua all the way till today. There's always been a remnant. You know, sometimes that remnant was very small. Some of the history is heartbreaking. What these people did to stay faithful, children being killed, you know, the Roman soldiers coming to the mountains, the Alpine Mountains in Italy, and just massacring these people, but they only got stronger in their faith by it. So here we are, we've come full circle the same way. And so many people in the last 10 years or so are coming out of that paganism. They're coming out of the like it says, the worthless roots of the past that led nowhere, and now they're coming back to the Bible. Isn't it awesome? Isn't it awesome that coming back to the Word there? And over here in Jerusalem, we've been blessed that we are the only covenant-keeping congregation I know of the world, a sacred name congregation that Yahweh has stationed here for the work that we're doing. So it's a blessing for us to be here. In one of my first meetings with the government, we've had all the way up to Prime Minister Netanyahu sanctioning what we're doing. In one of my first meetings with the government, they said to me, they said, Don, we love what you're doing. We totally support it. There's only one thing. You're going to have to change the name of your congregation. Because again, Jewish people do not use the name Yahweh. They won't say it because they feel it's too sacred. They don't use it because they think it's not his name. They know his name is Yahweh. They don't use it because they think it's too sacred. And they thought that this would be too offensive here in Israel. And I told them Jeremiah 16 and verse 21. In that day, they will all know that my name is Yahweh. 7,000 times. Look in your Bible. Don't believe me. 7,000 times the Creator says his name is Yahweh. 7,000 times. Now, if he tells me once, you know, if you tell me, there's a lot of new people I just met the first time. If you tell me your name is Bill, I'm not going to question you. I'm not going to go up and say, no, you look like an Edward. I'm calling you Edward. So why? Why Exodus 3:15? He says, my name is Yahweh. That is my memorial to all generations. So why on earth would we call him anything else? And not only anything else. Would anybody here call the Creator Allah? Raise your hand. Would anybody here feel comfortable calling the Creator Baal? You know, if we gave a prayer and you came up and someone said, in the name of Baal, would anybody say the Amen? Well, think about it then. The name God is the personal name of the Babylonian deity. I can prove it to you. Go to Isaiah 65. Isaiah 65 in verse 11. He says, but you are those who forsake Yahweh, who forget my holy mountain, who array a table for God, the name of the Babylonian deity of fortune, and fill mixed wine for many, the Babylonian deity of fate. I find it interesting because in America, they have on the money, in God we trust. Yet you can't pray in the school. You can't pray in the school. You know, you put your hand on a Bible and you say it, but yet if a teacher even mentions anything about the Bible, you're fired. Would they ever put on the money in Yahweh we trust? Absolutely. Would they ever put in the money in Yeshua we trust? No. But they put in God we trust because God is their deity. It's the deity of fortune. It's the deity of fate. But it's not the deity in the Bible. And this, like I said, you could check this out easily in any encyclopedia. You could check it if you have a study Bible. It is a fact that the name of the Babylonian deity, just like Buddha is the name of the Buddhist deity, that God is the name of the Babylonian deity. That's not first on, you know. That's coming straight from the scripture. So that's why I say, when they said to me, you got to change the name, I said, the day I change the name is the day I ain't here anymore. And this is what I believe makes our congregation different. You know, that we always say, we're the ministry of reconciliation, we're not the ministry of condemnation. We're not here to condemn anybody. Because we all come from somewhere. We all start here, and we're here, and we're here, and all of us are somewhere on that staircase. And all we want to do is put out our hands and help you come up the stairs, not kick you down. You know, so it doesn't matter where you're at now, feel comfortable with it. We want to make you feel comfortable. But if you really are looking for something, you came to the right place. Because I say, you know, we know Yahweh is omnipotent. He can hear you anywhere in the world. But when you come to Jerusalem, it's a local call. You don't need your long distance card, you know, you don't need your long distance cell phone. It's a local call. So really, if you come here with an open heart and you really come here to seek the truth, you're going to get it. You're going to get it. We're here to help you with that. And miracles, anything you want. It says that during the feast, and I'll read it, that anything your heart rightly desires, you can ask the Yahweh. So now you made it here. You got through the hardest part. And you're here, and you're praising Him, and we're going to have a great time together. And really, it's going to be a blessing. So let's go to Leviticus 23. Let's see, what is this day all about? What is Sukkot all about? Leviticus 23 and verse 33. It says, and Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, in the 15th day of the 7th month shall be a feast of booths, 7 days to Yahweh. On the first day shall be a holy gathering. You shall do no laborious work. That will be this coming Monday, starting tomorrow night at evening. 7 days you shall bring a fire offering to Yahweh. And again, when you look at a fire offering, remember there's three baptisms? Baptism of water, baptism of spirit, baptism of fire. And the baptism of fire, remember Yeshua said to John and Jacob when they said, can we sit at your right and off to your left? And he said, can you have the baptism I'm about to be baptized with? And they said, we can. And bad, bad move. So I said, okay, you're going to get the baptism, but to sit at my right and my left, it's not for me to give. You know, it's already been given before. But again, the baptism of fire is our trials. It's our purification by trials that come. So again, we bring that. We bring to Yahweh our overcoming, let's say, from our purification of trials. It is a solemn assembly. You shall do no laborious work of service. These are the set feasts of Yahweh which you shall proclaim holy gatherings. And that word literally means rehearsal. So that's the point. There's something connected with every holy day. You know, with Passover, it's connected with the blood of the lamb and bread and wine. And then you have unleavened bread that's connected with the days of unleavened bread. So every holy day has something connected with it because they're a rehearsal, like I was explaining what they're all for. So let's see what's connected with this feast here. What is our rehearsal about? It is a solemn assembly. You shall do no laborious work. These are set feasts of Yahweh, which you shall proclaim holy gatherings to bring a fire offering to Yahweh, a burnt offering and a food offering, a sacrifice and a drink offering, the thing of a day on its own day. Beside the Sabbaths of Yahweh, and beside your gifts, and beside your vows, and beside all your free will offerings, which you shall give to Yahweh. Also, in the 15th day of the 7th month, when you gather the increase of the land, so that's why we're going to see, it's also the feast of ingathering, because this is the time of the year when the Messiah returns, that he's gathering up, he's ingathering all of his flock. You shall keep the feast of Yahweh 7 days. On the first day, a holy Sabbath. And the 8th day, a holy Sabbath. You shall take to yourself on the first day the fruit of majestic trees, palm branches and boles of oak trees and willows of the valley, and we have them upstairs. Tomorrow we're going to do this. We're going to put it all together. And you shall rejoice before Yahweh your Elohim 7 days. Wow! Isn't it awesome? He's not telling us to cut off our arm. He's not asking for our firstborn. He's commanding us to rejoice for these next days. So what more rejoicing can you get to be in Jerusalem, his set-apart city, the Mount of Olives behind us? How wonderful. And you shall celebrate it, a feast to Yahweh, 7 days in a year, a never-ending statute throughout your generations. So it wasn't just for ancient times. It's a continual, never-ending statute. In the seventh month you shall keep it. You shall sit in sukkahs for 7 days. All who are native in Israel shall sit in sukkahs, so that your generation shall know that I caused the sons of Israel to live in sukkahs when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am Yahweh your Elohim. And Moses declared the appointed feast of Yahweh to the sons of Israel. So he's saying the same way Israel was 40 years in a temporary dwelling, what we're doing is we're to stay in some kind of temporary dwelling. We'll have a sukkah on the roof. You're welcome to go up there if you want to each day of the feast and sit in it. But really, you're living in a temporary dwelling. And as you can see, this isn't a 5-star Hyatt hotel. But if we were in a 5-star Hyatt hotel, it wouldn't be the feast. Because the feast is not about living it up lavishly to the flesh. The feast is about family. The feast is about being in a temporary dwelling and realizing how fleshly we are. And you're going to see it. As we build that sukkah that's going to look beautiful the first day, every day it'll get a little older. And by the 8th day when we're taking it down, the fruit will be withered. The branches will be, you know, yellow. And you see, that's what our life is. The same as this feast will go so fast. And you're going to say, wow, it seemed like the first day you were talking and then all of a sudden we're here saying the last prayer. But that's the way our life is. So that's what he's trying to show them, how fleeting life is. But at the same rate, what is important in life? And you know, it's interesting, I'm going to read a little bit here in a minute, that every feast day the Jewish people read a certain book of the Bible. On Yom Kippur, the most holy day of the year for Jewish people. Like I said, the birds don't even fly on Yom Kippur. Most sacred day. And what book do you think they're reading? Is it Deuteronomy? You know, is it Ezekiel? No. On Yom Kippur, the most holy day of the year, they're reading the book of Jonah. Why Jonah? They don't know, but we do. It's the only sign I'll give you, the sign of Jonah. 3 days and three nights. You know, as Jonah was in the belly of the great fish, the Son of Man will be in the heart of the earth. So it's really amazing. And the book they read now, this is Sukkot, right? We're talking about enjoyment, having good food, as we're going to see, if somebody wanted a little wine or something. It's a time of festivity. And you know what they're reading? Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes. That is saying the opposite. It's showing the vanity of life. But they do come in together, as we're going to see. So let's go to Ecclesiastes. Because really, this is that nothing physical lasts, but everything spiritual does. Nothing physical lasts, but everything spiritual does. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanities of vanities, says the preacher. Vanities of vanities. All is vanity. What is the profit to a man in all his labor, which he labors under the sun? So, wow, starting it right out, you know. Here's the richest person that ever lived, the wisest person that ever lived, the person that did everything. And he's starting his memoir by saying, it's all vanity, you know. Can almost close it up there, but he has a lot more things to tell us. Verse 12. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And I gave my heart to seek and to investigate by wisdom concerning all which is done under the heavens. It is an evil task Elohim has given to the sons of men to be afflicted by it. I have seen all the words which are done under the sun. And behold, all is vanity and striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what lacking cannot be weighed out. I spoke with my heart, saying, lo, I have become great and have increased wisdom over all that have been over Jerusalem before me. Yea, my heart has seen much wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I know that this also, it is striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much grief. And he who increases knowledge increases pain. Go to chapter 2 and verse 4. I made my works great. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. I planted trees in them of every fruit. I made pools of water for myself to water from them the forest, shooting forth trees. I bought slaves and slave girls, and the sons of the house were mine. Also livestock, a herd, and a great flock, which were mine, above all that were before me in Jerusalem. And I gathered to me silver and gold, and treasure of kings and provinces. I made ready male singers and female singers for myself, and the delight of the sons of men, a concubine and concubines. And I became great and increased more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom stayed with me, and all that my eyes desired I did not set aside from them. I withheld not my heart from all joy, for my heart rejoiced from all my labor, and this was my part from all my labor. Then I faced on all my works that my hands had done, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and lo, all of it was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. I think, wow, man, that's pretty depressing, you know? That the only king of Israel, the first king that was told that if he's faithful, Israel will never lack to have a king on the throne. The son of Solomon. And this is his words. Would this be your words at the end of your life? You know, really think about it. Because really, if you think about it, if you're bearing fruit for Yahweh's kingdom, if you brought up your children in the faith, and they have children, and you brought more people to faith, and you see the fruit that you've borne, would you say your life was vanity? No. But he's saying this because all of his efforts were only toward worldly things. Every effort was towards something physical. There was no fruit here for the kingdom. Nothing to leave that he could say, wow, this is what's going to be my reward when the Messiah comes. Then I saw that there is advantage to wisdom over folly, even as light has advantage over darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And I also know that one event happens with all of them. And I said in my heart, as the event of the foolish one, even so it will happen to me. And why then was I more wise? Then I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For there is not a memory of the wise more than with the fool forever. And that already the days to come will be forgotten. And how does the wise die above the fool? For then I hated life because the work that is done under the sun is evil for me. For all is vanity and striving after wind. Thus I hated all my labor that I labored under the sun, that I must leave it to a man who will be after me. And who knows if he will be wise or a fool? Yet he shall rule among all my labor in which I labored and acted wise under the sun. This is also vanity. And to me, I would think most fathers that had a father and son business, it would be the opposite. A father builds a business for his son to leave it to him. And he's proud to leave behind Solomon and son, whatever. But he's saying, he even with hundreds of children, he can't think of one that he can trust that he's feeling this way about. And I turn to make my heart despair over the labor which I labored under the sun. When there is a man whose labor is with wisdom and with knowledge and with success, yet he shall give it to a man who has not labored for it, for his share. This is also vanity and a great evil. For what is there for a man in all his labor and in striving of his heart, which he labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows and his task is grief. Yea, his heart does not even take rest in the night. This is also vanity to them. It is not good that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul see good in his labor. This also I saw that it is from the hand of the Elohim. So, really, that we see temperance of man and the vanity of Satan's system. It really is vanity. If all your focus is only on this life, like Paul said, woe is us. Because you are, no matter how successful, no matter how great you are, we all will get older and we will all die. But if you are living for that kingdom, if you are living for something that's eternal, if there's fruit that you bore that is going to be everlasting, then I would think when the time comes to close your eyes, you're going to die with a smile on your face. You know? And that's what it comes down to. And that's why this is what Sukkot is about. Sukkot is a family reunion about getting our priorities straight. So we can have a great time, and we are going to have a great time. We are going to eat good food, and we're going to see things that are going to be amazing to you. And you're going to meet some friends and make new friends, hopefully. Hopefully new family members. But really, that's what it's about. It's about people. It's about people. It's not about things. And relationships with people will go on into eternity. Sukkot shows Yahweh's whole plan of salvation. Like I said, the 7 days of Sukkot are like the 7,000-year plan. 6,000 years given to man, and then the 1,000 millennium given to Yahweh. Revelation has 7 congregations, 7 spirits, 7 seals, 7 bowls, 7 trumpets, 7 angels, 7 thunders, 7 plagues, 7 vials. Sukkot is the 7th feast in the 7th month, lasts for 7 days. So 7 is the number of completion. It's showing that this is the completion of Yahweh's work. Exodus 23 and verse 16. I'll start in 15. You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, as I have commanded you at the set time of the month of Aviv. For in it you came out of Egypt, and they shall not appear before me empty. Also, the feast of the harvest, the first fruit of your labor, of what you sow in the field. Also, the feast of ingathering, after the going out of the year, at your gathering your work from the field. 3 times in the year, every male shall appear before Adon Yahweh. So interesting. Like I said, you have a very, very interesting harvest schedule that comes here. Because normally, you have the big harvest in most places is in the spring, right? The winter ends, and then after the winter ends, you have spring coming, and then you have all the flowers and all these other things. But in Israel, the agricultural cycle goes from fall to fall. So now, you know, right before the equinox, all the harvest fruits, you know, they're taking in, and even the wheat and the barley that they took in from the summer, they're still bringing that grain up to Sukkot, you know, with the dates and the olives and the pomegranates, you know, and the figs, and they're bringing all those harvest things in. And then, right after Sukkot is over, what's going to happen? They're going to plow the field, and then they're going to plant the seed, and they're going to start it all over again. It's a cycle. It's a cycle. But now, if those people were faithful, if they kept the commandment of Yahweh, and they were faithful all year long, you know what's going to happen? Now they're going to have all this harvest, and they're going to be coming up to Jerusalem, to the city of Yahweh, to the Temple Mount, and they're going to receive their blessing. Because like I said, it's not like other places. You need the early rain and the latter rain. You have to have the early rain and the latter rain. Do you know in Israel it does not rain for 7 straight months? From late March, early April, all the way now, we haven't had rain. The last rain we had was probably the 3rd week of March. And that's normal. And now the rain will start. If you get rain around Sukkot, it's Yahweh's blessing is going to be good for us. But if you don't get rain, what's going to happen? You're going to put those seeds in the ground and they won't germinate. So Yahweh brings the early rain for them to germinate. And then, of course, in December, January, February, you're going to get your rain. But if you don't get the latter rain, if you don't get the rain in March and April, everything that was there, it will come to fruition. So these people were dependent on Yahweh for their survival. Because if Sukkot came and there was no harvest, you had a long, long winter that was coming. So you could see why they would be happy. Not just that they have food, but that they're getting Yahweh's blessing. Because when you see those big pomegranates, I'm going to take you to a place, the only place in the world that they make pomegranate wine. One place in the world. And they're actually using this in the hospitals here in Israel. They're giving it to people intravenously. And some of these pomegranates are 1.5 kilos. Yeah, they use it against breast cancer. They use it for healthy for your heart. But the pomegranate is one of the healthiest fruits. And it's interesting. Like I said, when you see these things, you see the blessing of Yahweh. But if you weren't faithful, and you weren't being obedient to the commandment, he's not going to bring the early rain, and he's not going to bring the latter rain. And that's what we need now. That's why the Feast of Ingathering, we need that rain to come so that we can ingather the same way. Like the song, bringing in the sheaves. He's going to separate the wheat from the chaff. So we see this. It's the Feast of Ingathering that's coming here. The Feast of Ingathering. We go to Psalm 129. Because another thing we know that's coming here, very shortly, and Yahweh willing, not during the time we're here, I don't believe so, but there is war coming here very soon. And it will not be like other wars. The enemies of Israel are coming together against her. And I think another reason why it's special for you to be here, we don't know if this could be our last year doing this. There's going to be many, many changes coming in these coming months. And I don't believe it's just here in Israel. We'll probably do a Bible study on this, but I do believe that this will turn into World War III, and there's a lot of evidence to that. But Psalm 129, it says, many times they have distressed me from my youth. Let Israel now say, they have distressed me from my youth many times, yet they have not prevailed over me. The plowers plowed on my back, and they made their furrows long. Yahweh is righteous, he cuts the cords of the wicked. Let them be ashamed and turn back, all those who hate Zion. Let them be like the grass in the rooftops, which dries up before it dries out. With which the reaper does not fill his hand, nor the binder sheaves his bosom. And those who pass by have never said, the blessing of Yahweh be on you. We bless you in the name of Yahweh. So amazingly enough, even some people that are Christians that hate Israel, you know, that hate Israel, and we know their neighbors, you know, really the what's going on over here, that their neighbors are against them. But in the end time, one of the big judgments that's coming is because Yahweh is dwelling again in this land and the specialness of it. And that the neighbors are not accepting that. We know from Zechariah 14, which is actually connected with Sukkot. Zechariah 14. Because we know the Messiah, like we said, returns to the Mount of Olives right behind us. And we'll just read a little bit about that right here. Behold, the day of Yahweh comes, and your spoil shall be divided among you. For I will gather all nations to battle against Jerusalem, and the city will be captured, and the houses plundered, and the woman raped. And half the city will go into exile, and the rest of the people shall not be cut off from the city. And Yahweh shall go out and fight against those nations, like the day he fought in the day of battle. And his feet shall stand in that day on the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, right there. And the Mount of Olives shall divide from its middle, from the east to the west, and a great valley, and half of the mountain shall move toward the north, and half of it toward the south. So we're seeing this battle is coming. Go down to verse 16. Then it shall be everyone who is left from all the nations which came up against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King, Yahweh of hosts, and keep the feast of the Sukkot. And it will be whoever will not go up from the families of the earth to Jerusalem to worship the King, Yahweh of hosts, there shall be no rain to them. Even if the family of Egypt does not go up, nor come in, then the rain shall not be on them, but the plague with which Yahweh shall strike the nations who do not go up to keep the feast of Sukkot. This shall be Egypt's offense and the offense of all nations who do not come up to keep the feast of Sukkot. So we see this is not just something that is an archaic thing that was done in the past and has no relevance to our time. But this is something in the very time we're living in that's saying when the Messiah appears, you know, whoever does not come up to Jerusalem to represent their nation is not going to get rain. Their nation is not going to get the latter rain that Yahweh is going to bring. So, again, when we're doing this rehearsal, this is what we're rehearsing. We're rehearsing this of Yahweh's sovereignty over all the world, starting right here in His capital, in Jerusalem. Matthew 5:35. Verse 34 says, but I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, because it is the throne of Yahweh, nor by the earth, because it is the footstool of his feet, nor by Jerusalem, because it is the city of the great king. It's the city of the great king. So you will see there are many people here during Sukkot. They get hundreds of thousands of people that are going to be here this next week. Matter of fact, after the first holy day, the prayer that the rabbis do at the Wailing Wall, you cannot even get down there. It is just wall-to-wall people because of how many people are coming in. But again, our brother Judah, as much as I love them, as much as I will serve them, and I'll even die for them, our brother Judah is not coming here to worship the King of Kings for the city of the great King, Yeshua. You got several thousand people at the Christian embassy not far from here. You know? And nice people, met some of them. Some of them may even come in here and visit with us during the feast. But they're not coming to proclaim the name Yahweh in His city. They're not coming for Yeshua, for Sukkot. They don't even understand it. And that's why it's great to go through these kind of things to help people understand it, you know, when they're doing these things. But we have the opportunity, the blessing, and the responsibility that we can proclaim the true message of Yahweh and Yeshua these next 8 days. That we're rehearsing for what it's about. And I'm telling you, I've talked to many, many thousands of Christians over the last 30 years that even had no idea what even the kingdom of Yahweh was. Some people think it's a feeling in your heart, or it's just something that you do. They have no idea that this is a real kingdom, that the Bible talks about this, that the Messiah is coming back to earth right over there to reign from the city for 1,000 years and conquer every enemy, the last enemy being death. And it is a great message, because when he comes back, he's overcoming every sickness, he's overcoming every disease, he's overcoming even death. And that anybody from any race or any place on earth that comes to him can be part of that. That it's not exclusive. It's not something that, well, it's for somebody else. What a message we have to give. And in a time where the world is really out of hope, that's what they need. And you know the word that in most Bibles, King James, whatever, they put the word gospel. Literally, that word in the Aramaic, in the original, is sepharta, which means hope. You know, we translate it good news because it is good news. But literally that word means hope, because it's a hope that you're giving people of something more than what they have. And it's about as real as you can get, as we're going to see here the next 2 weeks. That everything is literal, that everything that Yahweh wrote in this Bible will come alive as we start going to these places and you start understanding it from a Hebraic standpoint. So it's a great blessing we have at Sukkot, that we come here. You know, and it is the city of the great king. It really is, and we have that blessing to bless him. 1 Kings 14:21. It says, in Rehoboam, the son of Solomon reigned in Judah. Rehoboam was 41 years old when he began to reign. And he reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, the city which Yahweh chose out of all the tribes of Israel to put his name there. So again, out of this vast land, which you'll get to see a lot of it, you know, maybe not all of it, but you'll get to see a lot of it, that out of all the places actually on earth, that this one city, Yerushalayim, you know, city of peace, that Yahweh chose this city to put his name. And again, it's on our message today. We do have messages online that have very conclusive evidence that this was also where the Garden of Eden was. You know, there are scriptures that attest to that, and I think it fits in well. Psalm 132. Psalm 132 and verse 13. Psalm 132 and verse 13. Yahweh has chosen Zion. He has desired it for his dwelling place. This is my rest till forever. I will dwell there. I have desired it. Wow. I know you're going to have the opportunity. I don't know how many of you sing Hebrew songs. You know, maybe you're not fluent in Hebrew. Probably not too many people are. But you know, what I find really neat is that, you know, Yahweh is past language. You know, it doesn't matter what language you're speaking. We probably have, I'm guessing, at least 10 or 15 languages here right in this room. You know. So whatever language you pray in, he hears your language. But how neat is it to come to his city and praise him in his language? You know, you say like parents. When you're a parent, you love your child. And if your child doesn't come to you, you'll go to them because they're your child. But how good does it feel when that child's coming to your house? How good does it feel when that child's given respect? And here it is. This is what the Bible tells us over and over and over. This is the city where Yahweh dwells. This is the city that he's pointed out. This is where he's put his name. And believe me when I say it, I know for all of you, it's been a hard road. Some of them will not even make it. We had some that would have given their right arm to be here, and at the last minute, for different reasons, they couldn't. But whatever you put out to be sitting in that chair, your blessing will be 100-fold if you just ask for it. You know, if you just ask for it. Yahweh is waiting there to shower it on you, because he knows that you didn't come here just for fun. You didn't come just for vacation. That you sacrificed what you did to get in that chair, because this is his feast. This is his city. And you're coming to honor him. And he really, he appreciates that. Deuteronomy 16:16. Three times in the year shall all males appear before Yahweh your Elohim in the place which ye shall choose, Jerusalem, we just read it, and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Weeks, the Feast of Tabernacles or Sukkot. And they shall not appear before Yahweh empty, but each with his gift in his hand according to the blessing of Yahweh your Elohim, which he has given to you. Now if you look this up, it's not just money. Of course, people can come and you can give your offering or whatever. But when he says, as he's blessed you, you know, if your blessing is your voice, then come here and sing to Yahweh. You know, if you have another blessing, you come here with what he's blessed you with and you share it with each other. And that's what he wants. That's what he's looking for during these days. Deuteronomy 14. Go back a couple of pages. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 22. He says, tithing you shall tithe all the increase of your seed that the field yields year by year. And we know that. You know, the tithe belongs to Yahweh. He says it in Malachi, you have robbed me. And they say, how have we robbed you? And he says, tithe and offering. Everything belongs to him, including your ability to earn money. So, can you imagine? He owns everything. Psalm 24, the earth is Yahweh's, the fullness thereof, the people and those who dwell in it, even our life belong to him. So he could just have us as slaves and take everything. And it would be his right because everything belongs to him. But all he asked for is 10% to be our partner. And for me, when I found that out, I said, wow, this is great. Because number one, if I'm going to be a partner with someone, I was in business from the time I was that high. I wanted to be a partner with someone who was successful. I wanted to be a partner with someone who knew a business so that I knew it would be successful. So you can't think of a greater partner than Yahweh. And, you know, in even a normal partnership in the world is usually 50-50, right? And depending on who's doing more of the work, what if you're a silent partner? And your partner's doing all the work and all you did was invest money. Would it still be 50-50? No. Here it is, Yahweh's giving all the increase, and he only asked for 10%. I mean, it's not too much to ask for, 10%. And he will take the 10% you're giving, and he will multiply it 1,000-fold. So you're tithing there, and then in verse 23, and you shall eat before Yahweh your Elohim in the place which he shall choose to cause his name to dwell, Jerusalem, the tithe of the grain, the tithe of the wine, the tithe of the oil, and the firstlings of your herd and your flock. So can you imagine even his 10%, he says, take 10% of that and use it for the feast. How wonderful it is. How wonderful. And of course, in ancient times today, you know, most of compensation is done in little pieces of paper with dead dignitaries on it. But it wasn't like that in the olden days. In olden days, most of compensation was done through physical things, through grain, through, you know, oil or whatever. So you would tithe that, you know, whatever it is your increase, your tithing. And then out of that increase, you can take 10% of it and use it and come to appear before him. And verse 24, and if the way is too long for you that you cannot carry it, there's a lot of people, oh, Jerusalem, no, no, no. I'll see it when the kingdom comes. You know what I say? Don't be too sure. Unless the kingdom of Yahweh is in you, you will not be in the kingdom of Yahweh. And what that means is that it should be a burning desire in your soul. You should be living every day for that kingdom and to share it with other people. You know? And I think the greatest blessing in my life is to be able to appear before Yahweh here in his holy land. If the place is too far from you, which Yahweh Elohim shall choose to set his name there, where Yahweh Elohim shall bless you, then you shall give it for silver and bind up the silver in your hand, and you shall go to the place that Yahweh Elohim shall choose. So there wasn't an alternative in biblical days. And you shall pay the silver. Now here it is. This is what you're allowed to do with your tithe. You shall pay the silver for whatever your soul rightly desires. For oxen, for sheep, for wine, for fermented drink, or whatever your soul rightly desires. So not the abuse of it. You know, it's not about coming here and abusing something, but rightly desires. And you shall eat there before Yahweh Elohim, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. So like we said, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, right? But at a family reunion, you know, at the end of your life, when you're sitting there and you're reflecting on your memories, what are you going to remember? You know, you're going to remember those times around the dinner table with the people you love the most, with your children, with your parents, with your grandchildren. Those are your memories. You're not going to sit there on your deathbed and think, wow, that 4 hours of overtime I put in. Oh, I can remember that, how nice it was. Of course not. And this is what it is. And this is why it's a feast to indulge in the right things. It's a feast to get our priorities straight and to really enjoy yourself. You know, like last night, having that wonderful meal with lamb, you know, and rice and these kind of things. So this is what Yahweh says. This is what he tells us. He tells us that we can come here, appear before him to get your blessing, and you can really, really enjoy yourself more than ever you can imagine. Interesting, a part of it is, though, we know from the Bible that Israel was cast out of this land. You know, if you look in Leviticus 23, I'm not going to go there, but when they were in the wilderness, they weren't keeping all the holy days in the wilderness. They weren't keeping it before there. Yahweh said, when you enter the land, you know why? Because you need the land to keep the holy days, at least properly. You know, it all centers around the harvest. You know, there's all, you know as well as I do, all the calendar woes. A couple of years ago, I had someone send me, it's got to be the new year, there's ripe barley in Arizona. But unfortunately, Arizona is not the place where Yahweh put his name. It's not the place that he tells you to come up to three times in a year. So you need the land to get Yahweh's blessing from the land to you, and it's a secular pattern. You know, you keep your obedience, you work the land blesses you, you come up here, and then you roll it over and over and over and over again. But what happens? We know it. Our great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy, whether his name is Zebulon, Dan, Levi, Manasseh, or one of these other names, they didn't do it. And Yahweh did cast them out of the land into the four corners of the earth. And I find it amazing because I've been blessed to go to many places on this earth that I had no idea the people I was going to. And when I was there, I found out they were Israelites. Amazingly, amazing stories for another day. But really, it's interesting how Yahweh cast this out. So people say, well, now, do we have to come up to Jerusalem for the feast in our diaspora? I say, no, that's your punishment. Your punishment is you can't come up. You know, before 100 years ago, before airplanes and cars and trains, how could you come up? You know, but never remember the fact, it is a curse that you're living among the nations. It's not a blessing. So when they take Yahweh Sukkot and they make it into, hey, let's go to Hawaii and all have a party. Maybe a party in a good time, but it's not Yahweh Sukkot. Because you can't have Sukkot without the ingathering. You can't have Sukkot without the harvest fruits. You can't have Sukkot without Jerusalem. So what do? You do the next best thing. You practice. You rehearse. You rehearse for it. But if you rehearse, always read Psalm 137. No, in our diaspora, it's our punishment that we can't come up. And I say, did Yahweh in this last generation, where it's life and death now, did he only create airplanes and trains and all of these other things so that his people in the diaspora could see their homeland? Because I'll tell you, once you see this wonderful land that Yahweh's given you, you have so much more hope to move on. He told Abraham, go to the north, the south, the east, and the west. Look at this great land that I've given to you and your seed forever. And Galatians 3:29, if you are in Messiah, you are Abraham's seed and an heir according to the promise. I don't know any scriptures where Yahweh promised Abraham heaven. He didn't do it. He promised Abraham this very land. We're not going to be there this year, unfortunately, but some of you were with us last year in Hebron. Where we went there and we were about where I am from, Laura, from the bones of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And you just think about that. Their bones are laying there just waiting for that promise to be fulfilled. And he will fulfill that promise. He will fulfill that promise. When Yeshua comes down and those bones go on bones and they come out of the grave, and you are going to see something that mankind has never seen before. Because Yahweh fulfills his promise. Yahweh fulfills his promise. Psalm 137. So to our brothers and sisters in diaspora that don't have the blessing of coming up to Jerusalem at feast time, you do the best you can, but read Psalm 137. There by the rivers of Babylon we sat down. Also we wept when we remembered Zion. We hung our harps on the willows in the midst. For there our captors asked us the words of a song. Yea, our plunderers asked joy, saying, sing to us a song of Zion. And remember I just read which one of the things you're supposed to make your sukkah? Willow. in their diaspora, they weren't cutting the willows down. They were hanging their harps on the willows because they couldn't sing Yahweh's joy while they're in diaspora. Because the people, the land, and the covenant, they go together. They go together. And yes, we are in the beginning of the new covenant. Yes, our sins are forgiven. Yes, Messiah is the reconciliation for that. But there's a lot more. That's only the first day of the rest of your eternity. There is a lot more, and the beginning of that is this land. This land. Read Ezekiel 48. When the Messiah returns, he will give back to each tribe the allotment of their land. He will reign right from here, and the law will go forth to all this earth. It is a real kingdom. It is real people. And physically, you're right here. How special is it to represent Yahweh for that? To really understand it. There are captors asked us this words of a song. Our plunderers asked joy, saying, sing to us a song of Zion. How shall we sing the song of Yahweh on a foreign soil? If I forget you, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget. Let my tongue cleave to my palate if I do not remember you. If I do not bring up Jerusalem above the head of my joy. O Yahweh, remember for the sons of Edom the day of Jerusalem, who said, make it bare even to its foundations. O daughter of Babylon, O destroyed one, blessed is he who shall repay you for your recompense which you dealt to us. Blessed is he who seizes your little ones and dashes them against the stone. And unfortunately, many of Yahweh's people around the world have forgotten Zion. They've forgotten the blessings, and this is why people can come out and say, the church has replaced Israel. You know, grace has replaced the law. And I say, wow, you've been in diaspora too long. You don't find it here in the words of this book. You don't find it here. What you find is a loving creator who loved us so much, who keeps his word. He's not like man that he lies. That even almost 4,000 years from the time he made that promise to Abraham, it is still in his mind and he is fulfilling it this day with his people around the world. How wonderful the ways of Yahweh. Go to Zechariah 1. An amazing book, the book of Zechariah. And let's look at Jerusalem in the end time. Because remember, for several thousand years, Jerusalem was barren. Nobody was here. They were in the diaspora until our brother Judah started coming home. The land was a barren wilderness. When Mark Twain came here in the late 1800s as a pilgrim, he couldn't believe it. He said, that is the promised land? It was a land filled with malaria, more malaria than anywhere else on earth, even when Israel became a nation in 1948. That's why they have all these eucalyptic trees. You know, thank you to Australia. I don't know if we got any from New Zealand. But they brought it here. They were the ones who brought it, the eucalyptic trees. They're not indigenous to the land because the eucalyptic trees take a lot of the water, and that's what got rid of the malaria, you know. But it wasn't the Garden of Eden. And now, just 65 years later, you know, it talks about in Isaiah 35 that water will gush out of the desert. Take a ride down to the south and you'll see that in the desert around maybe 12, 15, 17 years ago, artesian wells they didn't even know were there, gushing, gushing, gushing. Not with oil. Didn't find the oil yet. But with water. And now today, to the south of this country, what was a desert wilderness before is becoming like the Garden of Eden. Palm trees, cities that are there. Beersheba the same way. You know? So many things that we're seeing prophecies in this Bible fulfilled in our day today to this very nation that are already fulfilled. There's a lot more to come, but so many that are already fulfilled. Zechariah 1 and verse 12. And the messenger of Yahweh answered him, O Yahweh of hosts, until when will you not have pity on Jerusalem and on the cities of Judah against which you have cursed these 70 years? And Yahweh answered the messenger who was talking with him with good words, words of comfort. So the messenger who was talking with me said, cry out saying, so says Yahweh of hosts, I am jealous for Jerusalem and for Zion with a great jealousy. And with great anger, I am angered at the haughty nations, and that I was but a little angry, and they gave help for evil. So Yahweh says this, I have returned to Jerusalem with compassion. My house shall be built in it, says Yahweh of hosts, and a line shall be stretched over Jerusalem, a plumb line, measuring line. Cry out again, saying, so says Yahweh of hosts, my city shall again overflow with goodness, and Yahweh shall yet comfort Zion, and shall yet choose Jerusalem. You know, interesting enough, what is the big problem, they say, is holding up world peace? Dividing of Jerusalem. Dividing of Jerusalem. Why is that so important? This world doesn't have enough problems to worry about? There's 100 wars going on? Why would it be so important that they need to divide Jerusalem? That they need to create a Palestinian state? Because it's a spiritual problem. It's a spiritual problem from the Garden of Eden, and it's coming to a time where this problem is going to be solved by Yahweh. And he is saying, he's like a bear awakened out of his sleep, and he's saying, now I am awake. See, I was angry before, but now I am saying I will fulfill my promise. Judah's back in the land after 2,500 years. I can show you 100 scriptures that show it. And the kings of this earth want to take them away because they want to make Yahweh a liar. And he said, I was a little angry. They made me more angry. Go to Joel 3. Joel 3 and verse 1. For behold, in those days and at that time, it's a Jewish idiom. Whenever you see that, it's the end time or millennium. In those days and at that time, when I bring again the exiles of Judah and Jerusalem, here they are, there's a million of them here, never been bigger than what it is. So this is our time we're talking, and look what he says. I will gather all nations, and I will bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat, Kidron Valley, right behind you. And I will enter into judgment with them there, for my people and my inheritance Israel, whom they've scattered among the nations, and they divided my land. What true believer in Yahweh would ever support the dividing of Jerusalem, the making of a Palestinian state? You know, when this partition plan happened back in 1948, when they were talking about it, they already made a Palestinian state. It's called Transjordan. You know, 70% of Jordanians are Palestinians. And it talks about in the book of Ezekiel, he says, because I gave you your nation to Edom, and you weren't happy, but you wanted both these nations, you're going to get your punishment. See, like I said, this is a spiritual battle, and Yahweh is going to take care of it. Zechariah 12, going back to Zechariah. Verse 2 and 3. Zechariah 12, 2 and 3. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling for all the people all around. And it shall also be against Judah in the siege against Jerusalem. You know. And in that day I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the people, and all who lift it will be cut into pieces, and all the nations of the earth will be gathered against it. Right where we are. Drop down to verse 6. In that day I will make the leaders of Judah like a hearth of fire among the wood, and like a torch of fire among cut grain. And they shall devour all the people around on the right and on the left. And Jerusalem will be inhabited again in her place in Jerusalem. In her place again. Jerusalem is in Jerusalem. Zechariah 2, go back a few chapters. To see Yahweh's love for this land and a love for his people. Zechariah 2 and verse 10. He says, sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, for lo, I come and I will dwell among you, says Yahweh. And many nations will be joined to Yahweh in that day. And they shall be my people, and I will dwell among you. And you shall know that Yahweh of hosts has sent me to you. And Yahweh shall possess Judah, his portion, in the Holy Land. And he shall again choose Jerusalem. Be silent, all flesh, before Yahweh, for he is raised up out of his holy habitation. So we see that Yahweh's love for his people has never waned. And here it is. But the problem is, do Yahweh's people have the same love for the land that he set apart for his people? Jeremiah 8. And verse 18. Jeremiah 8 and verse 18. He says, my refreshing is beyond grief. My heart is sick within me. Behold, the voice of the cry of the daughter of my people from a distant land. Is not Yahweh in Zion? Or is not her king in her? Why have they provoked me with their carved images, with foreign vanities? Harvest has passed, the summer has ended, and we're not delivered. See, we're here. This is it. This is the harvest time. This is the festivity. This is the happiness. And he's saying here, harvest passed. Where is everybody? Where's the joy? Where's Sukkot? For the breaking of the daughter of my people, I am broken. I mourn. Horror has taken hold of me. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no healer there? Why then has the healing of the daughter of my people not come? So we see sometimes Yahweh is ready, but are his people ready? Are his people ready? And I'll tell you something. We all, like I said, we'll have somewhere around more than 20 nations represented just in this room during this feast. And we all come from different backgrounds. We all come from different places. But wherever you come from, if you're going to be in Yahweh's kingdom, you're going to end up here. You know, so you have to start getting used to that. You know, I say that when I teach in the ambassador training. You know, wherever you're temporarily living, if it's in America or it's in Africa or it's in Asia, you're just assigned there as the ambassador of Yahweh. But his kingdom is from above. Our citizenship is in heaven. And when that kingdom comes, this is where it will start from. Micah 4. Micah 4 and verse 1. But it shall be in the end of days, the mountain of the house of Yahweh will be established on the top of the mountains. And it shall be lifted up from the hills, and people shall flow to it. And many nations shall come and say, let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, and to the house of the Elohim of Jacob. And he will teach us from his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the Torah will go forth out of Zion, and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. And he shall judge between many people, and will decide for strong nations afar off. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift the sword against nation, nor shall they learn war anymore. And this is after the great war that's coming. But they shall each one sit under his vine and under his fig tree, and there will be no trembling, for the mouth of Yahweh of hosts has spoken it. So here it is. This Jerusalem is the embryo of his kingdom. Jerusalem is the start of it. And I honestly believe that our work is a part of that. Because there's no other work in the world that has been stationed over here and is sending the word out from here. Praise to Yahweh in his glory. Isaiah 52. Isaiah 52. He says, awake, awake, put on your strength, Zion. Put on your beautiful robes, O Jerusalem, the holy city. For never again shall uncircumcised and unclean one come to you. Shake yourself from the dust, rise up, sit, Jerusalem. Free yourself from your neckbands, O captive daughter of Zion. For so says Yahweh, you were sold for nothing, and you will not be redeemed with silver. For so says Adonai Yahweh, my people went down to Egypt at the first to reside there, and without cause Assyria oppressed them. So then, what is it to me here? Declares Yahweh. For my people are taken for nothing, those ruling howl, declares Yahweh, and my name is continuously despised every day. So my people shall know my name in that day, for I am speaking, behold me. How beautiful on the mountain are the feet of them proclaiming good news, making peace heard, hearing tidings of good, making heard salvation, the word is Yahshua, saying to Zion, your Elohim reigns. The voice of your watchmen, they lift the voice together, they sing aloud, for they shall see eye to eye when Yahweh brings back Zion. Break out, sing together, waste places of Jerusalem. For Yahweh comforts his people. He has redeemed Jerusalem. Yahweh has bare his holy arm in the eyes of the nations. And all the end of the earth shall see Yeshua, our Elohim. That's the way it is from the original Hebrew. Very, very clear. Isaiah 62. Go a couple of chapters over. For Zion's sake I will not be silent. For Jerusalem's sake I will not rest. Until her righteousness goes forth as brightness, and Yeshua as a burning torch. And nations shall see your righteousness, and all kings your glory. And you shall be called by a new name, which the mouth of Yahweh shall name. You also shall be a crown of beauty in the hand of Yahweh, and a royal headdress in the hand of your Elohim. You no longer shall be called Azubah, but nor shall your land be any more called Shamamah, but you shall be called Hetzibah, and your land Beulah. For Yahweh delights in you, and your land is married. For as a young man marries a virgin, so shall your sons marry you. And as a bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so your Elohim shall rejoice over you. I have set watchmen on your walls, O Jerusalem. All the day and all the night they shall not always be silent. You who remember Yahweh, keep not silent, and give him no rest until he sets up and makes Jerusalem a praise in all the earth. Do we pray that every day? Do we nag at Yahweh? We used to have a tour guide, Dali knows him, Miha, and he used to always tell me, Don, if I don't remember, keep nagging me. Do we nag Yahweh? Do we pray every day and nag him? You know, come on, make Jerusalem, rebuild it, because he actually commands us here to nag him. Verse 10, pass through the gates, Prepare the way of the people. Raise up, raise the highway. Clear it from stones. Lift a banner over the people. So here it is. It's a herald that's coming, and this is what they would do. When a king was coming, before the king would come, he would send a herald to clean the rocks from the road, to fix any potholes, so that the king has a smooth road. That's what John the Baptist did for Yeshua. Raise a banner, messianic symbol, because of the banners of Israel. Behold, Yahweh has made it heard to the ends of the earth. Tell the daughter of Zion, behold, Yeshua comes. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. And they shall be called the holy, the redeemed of Yahweh. And to you it shall be called, sought out, a city not forsaken. Psalm 48, 1 and 2. We'll be finishing here in a few minutes. A song for the sons of Korah. Great is Yahweh and exceedingly to be praised in the city of our Elohim, his holy mountain. Chop down to verse 8. As we have heard, so we have seen in the city of Yahweh of hosts, in the city of our Elohim, Elohim establishes it forever. Drop down to verse 11. Mount Zion shall be glad, the daughters of Judah shall shout for joy because of your judgment. Walk around Zion, yea, go all around, count its towers, set your heart on its ramparts. Pass between its strongholds in order that you may report to the coming generation. For this Elohim is our Elohim forever and ever. He will be our guide even unto death. So here it is. You're Yahweh's representative. You're his watchman here in 2:12. And he says, walk the city. Walk the ramparts. You can actually go on the walls of Old Jerusalem and you could walk around. But when you go back, what kind of report are you going to bring to the land? I know, I'm sure many of you, it happens every year. I'm sure people are even trying to stop you from coming here. You're going to Israel? You're going to die! You know, they think there's bombs coming in. It's a war zone. Right? But like the children of Israel in the wilderness, when they came into the promised land and they were carrying grapes on a pole because Yahweh's provision was there. That's what Sukkot is about. It's about Yahweh's provision. Why are there 7 harvest fruits? Why is it the wheat, dates, barley, grapes, olive, figs, and pomegranates? Because those are the 7 fruits that does not need man's cultivation. They'll grow on their own. They come from heaven. They come from Yahweh. And that's what this is about. It's his provision to his people. It's about showing his faithfulness. So when you go back, what kind of report will you bring? Walk the walls, walk the city. You know, do it. Will you bring a good report or will you be like the messengers that came? Whoa, there's giants in the land. There's giants in the land. So you have a great responsibility. It's a great honor. It's a great blessing. But it's also a great responsibility. Let me end with Zechariah 8. Zechariah, the 8th chapter. And look how much love our Heavenly Father has for this set-apart city he set out for himself. The word of Yahweh was to me saying, so says Yahweh of hosts, Zechariah 8. I was jealous for Zion with great jealousy, and I was jealous for her with great wrath. So says Yahweh, I have returned to Zion, and I will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and the mountain of Yahweh of hosts, the holy mountain. So says Yahweh of hosts again, there shall be old men and old women sitting in the streets of Jerusalem, and each man with his staff in his hand because of their many days. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in its streets. So says Yahweh of hosts, if it is marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of the people in those days, will it also be marvelous in my eyes, says Yahweh of hosts. So says Yahweh of hosts, behold, I will save my people from the land of the rising sun, and from the land of the setting sun. And I will bring them, and they shall live in the midst of Jerusalem, and they shall be for a people to me, and I will be their Elohim in truth and in righteousness. Everything that Yahweh is doing in the end time is about restoring his covenant, restoring his land, restoring his Torah. It's all about what he's doing. You know, when Israel came into the land, think about this. They're 40 years in the wilderness, they finally get to come in. And when they came into the land, they had a fight for their inheritance. It wasn't an empty land that they just came, like some of those movies you see in the West where you put your stake and you get the land, you know, and everybody rides. It wasn't like that. So even after 40 years, when he's saying, now go get your inheritance, they're coming in here, and what's happening? The land is filled with other people. They had to fight for it because it had to be worthwhile to them. How much is our inheritance worth to you? The fact that Yahweh set this apart for me and for you, how much is that worth? What are you willing to sacrifice for it? You know, what is the meaning to it? Like I say, it's a great honor and a privilege that we can fulfill this great commission that He's given to us, that we can be here in His set-apart city, that we can proclaim His name, and we can share. So, wow, it's unbelievable to think we're saying all this, and we still have more than 24 hours before the feast even starts. So I'm telling you, this is a year we have an extra blessing here. You know, we really do. That we have extra time. I think we have a really, really good group. I know a lot of you are going to really get together and get to know each other. You know, in the coming days, we will have a night where we'll do testimonies. Whoever would like to get up and share a testimony, whether it's something from this particular time here or something from the past, we'll give you opportunity for that. We are going to also have an opportunity that we'll do a night for international missions, and we'll give you the opportunity to meet some of our brethren from around the world, from Philippines and Uganda and Ethiopia and some of the other places. So we really have a lot on store, and may Yahweh really bless you for it. So I will just end with a short prayer.